I am going to do a little bit of a like series similar to what you're doing, different topic, but a series where I'm going to do it. I think it'll be 3 weeks. But so I was browsing the Poetry Foundation, as you do, as I do every week.
One does.
As I do most weeks to sort of determine who I'm going to talk about. And I stumbled into their collections section, which I personally love.
Mm-hmm.
So I found this one collection that I really, really liked and thought was really cool about Harlem Renaissance poets.
Ooh.
Yeah. And
very
it had
fun. We've done a few so far, haven't we?
We've done one so far. Well, I mean, there were ones that were happening around the same time as the Harlem Renaissance.
Did I not do Langston Hughes?
No, not yet.
Oh.
I looked. You didn't do Langston Hughes just yet. Because I thought that was... I thought you had two.
Oh, I did Maya Angelou. But that's not the same as
no,
Langston Hughes.
Definitely not. Nope. But I thought we had two. I thought one of us had, and we hadn't yet. But so that means we need to do
cool.
him soon. Maybe I'll do him in the next couple of weeks.
Sweet.
That's not who I'm doing today. But I'm going to do a little bit of an introduction first to the Harlem Renaissance before I get to my poet for this week.
Sweet.
So if you don't know... Throughout the 1920s, creative and intellectual life flourished within the African-American communities in the North and Midwest regions of the U.S., but nothing like in Harlem, in New York City.
Hey, life lived just enough for the city.
There we go.
Yep.
The musical musings of Emily Klein.
That's not me.
It's
somebody else.
The New York City neighborhood encompassed 3 square miles and was pulsing with Black artists, intellectuals, writers, and musicians, including as well as Black-owned businesses from newspapers, publishing houses, and music companies to nightclubs, cabarets, and theaters, all of which helped drive the neighborhood's thriving scene. And I just want to put it out there, too, that most of my information came from the, like, write-up on Poetry Foundation. So a lot of this is
cool.
Paraphrased or also not paraphrased and just exactly what they said.
Super duper. Nobody's going to get us. It's fine.
It's fine. Many of the era's most important literary and artistic figures migrated or passed through the neighborhood, helping to define the period in which African-American artists reclaimed their identity and racial pride in defiance of widespread prejudice and discrimination.
This is in the 1920s?
Yes, is when it
started. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Harlem Renaissance was brought on by the Great Migration of the early 20th century. This was a period of time when hundreds of thousands of Black people migrated from the South to dense urban areas that offered relatively more economic opportunities and cultural capital. Editor, journalist, and critic Alan Locke described it as a spiritual coming of age for African American artists and thinkers who seized upon their first chances for group expression and self-determination. You may recognize names of the time such as Langston Hughes, who we've already mentioned, Claude McKay, who we talked about in episode 10.
Yes.
Go back and listen to that. And Georgia Douglas Johnson, who I will be talking about a little bit later.
Amazing.
All of these poets explored the beauty and pain of Black life and sought to define themselves and their community outside of white stereotypes. Poetry from the Renaissance reflected a diversity of forms and subjects. Claude McKay, for example, used culturally European forms such as the sonnet form, melded with a message of resistance. This can be seen in "If We Must Die," which is the poem that I read when I did Claude McKay.
Oh, I loved that.
Others like James Weldon Johnson. Others like James Weldon Johnson and Johnson, not Johnston. I don't know why his name is so hard to say right now. And Langston Hughes, I'm just going to skip it. We said it. Brought specifically Black cultural creations into their work, blending rhythms of ragtime, jazz, and blues into their works. So the period that I'm going to give a brief little sort of description on right now for this episode is 1914 to 1919. This period marked the start of the Great Migration, which sort of generally speaking took place from 1916 to 1970. This, as we mentioned earlier, was when millions of African Americans migrated from the South to the North to flee the economic exploitation that accompanied the primary options for occupation at the time, which were life as a Southern sharecropper or tenant farmer. And they also were escaping violent and pervasive racism. So they went north seeking well-paying industrial jobs left vacant in the wake of World War I, which cut off cheap immigrant labor from Europe and induced white American laborers to join the armed forces. So more than 175,000 African Americans settled in Harlem alone during this period.
Wow.
So a huge influx, which is really incredible. To, like, have that big of a population, like, shift within that amount of time.
Like, how did the city cope with that, I wonder? Like, I mean, just built faster.
Yeah. And I guess. I mean, you look back at old pictures of Manhattan where it's, like, much more sort of rural and it, like, more...
Well, you look at, like, uptown especially. Like, even, I mean, this is a lot earlier, but, like, you look at, like, Alexander Hamilton's time and it's, like... Uptown was the country.
Right.
And that was the suburbs. Literal suburb. Yeah.
That's Hamilton Heights, which is right. Like,
even he like south had a yard and like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was crazy.
Yeah. So, for our poet this week, from the Harlem Renaissance, we're going to talk about Georgia Douglas Johnson, who actually lived in Washington, D.C., but she was a major like person of the Harlem Renaissance and influence and really heavily influenced a lot of artists at the time. So,
cool.
Georgia Blanche Douglas Camp Johnson was born September 10th, 1880 in Atlanta, Georgia, to parents who were both of mixed ancestry. Her mother was African-American and Native American, and her father was African-American and English. Hmm. And her Johnson is her married name. So she was born Georgia Blanche Douglas Camp. Her mom's last name was Douglas, and her dad's last name was Camp.
Aww.
So it's just continuing to add on the names.
Wow. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. She was an African-American poet and one of the earliest African-American female playwrights.
Mm.
Yeah. In school, she excelled at reading, recitations, and physical education. Funny. Like, just
well done, you.
Good job. Get the blood flowing. she taught herself to play violin and developed a lifelong love of music that she expressed in her plays.
Mm.
She graduated from Atlanta University Normal College, which is a funny name for
is that
a place?
Atlanta
University Normal College.
Normal College.
Yeah, so that was like one of the colleges within the university.
The normal college.
The normal one, you know.
Yeah, it's like general gen ed.
Yeah.
Probably.
Maybe.
Didn't have to specify a major, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Cool.
She taught for a bit, so I don't know. Yeah, maybe it was just sort of a general thing that then allowed you to go into teaching or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But so after she graduated, she taught for a brief time in Marietta, Georgia, before...
In the hills of Marietta...
Musical interlude, before leaving that career to pursue her interest in music. Where do you think she studied music?
I'm not looking. I can't read your notes. She covered her screen as if I were looking. Where did she study music?
Yeah.
Emory University?
No.
No? Oh. Juilliard?
No.
Kent State? No. I don't know.
Where? Oberlin! There was a couple episodes back.
I was like, why is this significant? I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, because it was the first integrated it was the first college created to be both male and female students, so co-ed.
In the country?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she went
to school there. And
what year?
Music.
When?
Yeah. And apparently, so the Wikipedia page didn't save this, or one of the websites didn't say this, but apparently she also studied music at the Cleveland College of Music.
She was an Ohio gal.
She wasn't an Ohio gal, but she lived in Ohio for a brief amount of time while she studied.
She's an Ohio gal by heart.
She's as much of an Ohio gal as I am.
Yeah, you're an Ohio gal sometimes.
Sometimes. she then moved back to Georgia, where she became an assistant principal in a public school.
Hmm.
Then in 1910, she moved with her husband to Washington, D.C. Her husband, Henry Johnson, was not supportive of her literary ambitions,
which
sucks. Yeah, he was in politics and everything. He insisted that she devote more time to becoming a homemaker than publishing poetry.
Boo!
Yeah. She later dedicated two poems, The Heart of a Woman in 1918 and Bronze in 1922, to him. Although she traveled widely in the 1920s giving poetry readings. So, I mean, he didn't like it that much, but she still, like, went out and did all these things, and she was just sort of like, I'm gonna do it, and he had to be like,
don't!
I mean, okay.
No, I hate it.
He died, though, in 1925, and after her husband's death, she became, her home became the site, I skipped a bit. Her husband died in 1925, and she supported her two sons by working temporary jobs until she was appointed as the Commissioner of Conciliation by Republican President Calvin Coolidge. Whoa. As a gesture to her late husband's loyalty and political service.
Because,
like I said, he was in politics and everything. So she was appointed, she was given this, like, role and everything, so she had a job. Which is great.
That is great.
After her husband's death, her home also became the site of the S Street Salon, an important meeting place for writers of the Harlem Renaissance,
hey.
Such as Langston Hughes, Jean Toomer, Anne Spencer, Richard Bruce Nugent, etc., in Washington, D.C. So that was sort of like a really big meeting place for artists that were going through Washington, D.C., like either passing through or there for like readings and that sort of thing. It became sort of like the big, and we've talked before about salons, about mm-hmm. how it was like a really big sort of cultural thing at the time,
right.
for people of like similar thinking or that sort of thing. We talked about it with Dorothy Parker a lot, I think.
And Gertrude Stein.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she had one of these sort of main meeting places.
Wow.
This helped nationalize the movement of the Harlem Renaissance and build intercity connections between artists.
Very cool.
Johnson called her home the halfway house for friends traveling, and a place where they could freely discuss politics and personal opinions.
Nice.
And although black men were allowed, it mostly consisted of black women, such as Mary Miller, Marietta Bonner, I don't know, Mary Burrell, etc.
Nice. Lots of Marys.
Mary.
You had
Mary,
to have
Mary.
A name of Mary to get in.
Mary, Mary, quite contrary.
How does your garden grow? Whistle for bells and cocktails.
Who's to say? they were known to have discussions on issues such as lynching, women's rights, and the problems facing African American families, and they became known as the Saturday Nighters.
Hmm.
So she published her first poems in 1916, sort of backtracking just a little bit,
right?
In the NAACP's magazine called Crisis.
Crisis?
Crisis. Mm. Yes. She published four collections in total of all of her works. The Heart of a Woman in 1918, Bronze in 1922, Autumn Love Cycle in 1928, and Share My World in 1962. Johnson also had a weekly column called Homely Philosophy that was published from 1926 to 1932 in 20 different newspapers, including the New York News, Chicago Defender, Philadelphia Tribune, and Pittsburgh Courier.
Hmm.
She wrote numerous plays, including Blue Blood, performed in 1926, and Plumes, performed in 1927. In 1934, she lost her job in the Department of Labor with the change of administration.
Aww.
And, yeah, it happens, though, politics. And she returned to supporting herself with temporary clerical work. Johnson received an honorary doctorate in literature from Atlanta University in 1965, and then she passed away in May 1966.
Wow.
Then in 2009, it was announced that she would be inducted into the Georgia Writers Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that is Georgia Douglas Johnson, and I guess I need to decide which poem I'm going to read.
That would be nice.
Where did my thing go? I wanted to read, I guess I may as well just read all of her poems, or at least a lot of the ones I came by were fairly short poems, which I think is really interesting.
Nice.
But I guess I'll read the first one that I sort of came across that I really liked, and I mentioned it earlier, called The Heart of a Woman.
Oh, I was hoping you'd read that.
Yeah. So this was published in 1918 in her collection, called The Heart of a Poem and Other The Heart of a Woman and Other Poems.
The Heart of a Poem and Other Women.
I like that.
Yeah, me too. And that's actually kind of nice. Don't take it.
This is The Heart of a Woman. The heart of a woman goes forth with the dawn, as a lone bird, soft, winging so restlessly on. Afar o'er life's turrets and vales does it roam, in the wake of those echoes the heart calls home. The heart of a woman falls back with the night, and enters home, alien cage in its plight, and tries to forget it has dreamed of the stars, while it breaks, breaks, breaks on the sheltering bars.
She dedicated that to her husband?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, damn.
Right?
Youch.
That's
amazing.
I know. So she's talking about, like, having these gorgeous dreams and her heart sort of, like, wanting to soar, basically, and then realizing
itself
that it's
against
caged.
The cage.
Yeah. So it's just this gorgeous poem. I honestly, maybe I'll read another one because it is fairly short.
Yeah. It's beautifully sad though. Yeah. And it also, the Heart of a Woman, the title reminds me of one of my favorite Jeff Buckley song,
mm-hmm.
Just Like a Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I mean, it has nothing to do with it subject wise, but just the like, I don't know. I always find his music is very beautiful, but maybe some of the lyrics are kind of harsher.
Yeah.
And that sort of echoed in mm-hmm. this poem. So mm-hmm. just made me think of it.
Yeah. I will read one more. It's from that same collection, The Heart of a Woman and Other Poems, which I feel like it was published within that sort of time period that we're talking about right now, or that I sort of went over. So it's fitting. This one is called My Little Dreams. I'm folding up my little dreams within my heart tonight, and praying I may soon forget the torture of their sight. For time's deft fingers scroll my brow with fell, relentless art. I'm folding up my little dreams tonight within my heart.
Hmm.
It has, I feel like, similar themes.
Yeah.
To the, I mean, it makes sense because it's in the same collection, but it's like, yeah, having
these.
She
just must have felt so
stifled and sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not being able to fully sort of act on what
she knew she wanted to do. And,
right. And what was she was capable of and all that. I feel like in many ways, number one, her husband wasn't being supportive of her. She was a woman, and then especially a woman of color during
right.
a time when it's like they just didn't have, I mean, a time where she could see all of this thriving, all of the thriving community of African Americans and everything like that. But then also it's like still feeling somewhat stifled within that.
And separate.
And so
for sure.
It's like you have all this sort of inspiration and drive of the community around you
right.
that you then can't fully like act on in the way that you want to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's Georgia Douglas Johnson and a little bit about the Harlem Renaissance. Next week, not sure who I'm going to do yet, but I really loved sort of this idea of doing a little bit of a series on the Harlem Renaissance.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thanks for